A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 27, 1997, in the series Tough Questions, No Easy Answers, entitled, Is Religion Really Escape from Life? The texts for the sermon are Jeremiah 45 and John 12, verses 20 through 28. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I ask myself frequently whether my ministry enables people to meet life more honestly and authentically, whether it prepares them for positive engagement with life and the celebration of life, and the honest facing of the darkness, or whether my ministry might shield my people and shelter my people from the harsh reality of life and an honest appraisal of the human experience. Whether my ministry creates fully human beings, or whether my ministry, through the perpetuation of certain beliefs and practices, which maybe no longer square with our human experience in honest analysis, whether that holds my people in adolescence, if not infancy. That's a serious pastoral question. Because there is a tough question that I have to face, and we all do. And that is whether or not religion might really be simply an escape from life. Whether or not religious belief and practice and devotion is simply nothing more than a coping device. Because life can be very hard. A tough question with no easy answer. We've noted in the last couple of weeks that religion is a human phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon that is found universally in the most advanced societies and the most primitive and remote regions. And therefore, we recognize that there is something in the human being that structures religion, beliefs, cultic practices, moral codes. Religion is a human creation. And we've noted that in this long billions of years of evolutionary development, there arrived on the scene this human creature with consciousness, self-awareness. And with that consciousness and self-awareness came the awareness of our mortality. I must die. Those I love must die. And in that cumulative human experience, which is available to us today, we are not only aware of our mortality, but we are aware of the darkness and the pain and the suffering, which, if the fact that we die is the core of the core questions which generates the religious response, then certainly the experience of suffering that so mystifies us has added its own input to that religious creation. For there is darkness. I mentioned little Lydia Hatton. I don't have to give you a treatise on human suffering. But in a midnight visit to the hospital where the child is brought in order to get the excruciating pain under control, this beautiful, angelic, brilliant, precocious, lovely child is dying. And when one comes into such a room with such a child who counts for me up to 100, and I look into the face of her parents whom I married some years ago, what do I say? Pray God I don't say anything, but simply hold them and weep with them. God knows, not only will we die, but sometimes it hurts so much. And we can therefore understand the origin of religious systems in all of the multiform varieties that we find them as coping devices with those unanswered questions, those terrifying mysteries. We understand why the religious expression is universal in its scope. Ludwig Feuerbach, whom I mentioned last week, said that that is precisely the origin not only of religious practices and beliefs, but that indeed is the origin of the conception of God. That God is a human invention. That out of our deep need, out of our fear, out of the threat that we feel, the understanding of our vulnerability and the fragility of our existence, out of that deep need, simply being scared to death, we take that which would be our idealized existence and we project it onto the screen of reality. We call it God and we worship it. Feuerbach said that the human person is not created in the image of God, but God is created by the human person in the human image. And as I said last week, it is that claim that is at the very heart of modern atheism. Flowing out of Feuerbach to Marx, to Freud, to Nietzsche, we have the whole malaise of the 20th century, a century of chaos, of a people who are living without the reality of God. As Nietzsche cried, God is dead, we have killed him. God is dead, there is no truth, all is permitted. Feuerbach thus would see religion simply as a human coping device in face of the pain and the darkness and ultimately the death that marks our lives. And indeed, if one reads him, then one cannot, although it is done again and again and again, but one ought not in a pulpit discourse simply set him up as a straw man to destroy him. For what he says is true, all too true. He has laid his finger on the vulnerability of our religious practice in large degree. The Nobel Prize-winning biologist Jacques Monod said in his book Chance and Necessity, if he, that is the human person, accepts this negative message in its full significance, man must at last wake out of his millenary dream and discover his total solitude, his fundamental isolation. He must realize that like a gypsy, he lives on the boundary of an alien world, a world that is deaf to his music and as indifferent to his hopes as it is to his sufferings and his crimes. That is a concise articulation of the conviction that drives modern atheism and is at the basis of a soulless secularization that is becoming global. Erich Fromm in his Man for Himself said there is only one solution to the human problem, to face the truth, to to acknowledge his fundamental aloneness in a universe indifferent to his fate, to recognize that there is no power transcending him which can solve his problem for him. In this critique of religion, the claim is that religion is simply a coping device that shelters us from reality, that it keeps us in infancy or adolescence, that we do not rise up as a human person and face the reality of our situation, taking charge of our lives and our world. Feuerbach said we must move from God to the human person, from heaven to earth, from the hereafter to the here and now. That's the world we live in. That's the society of which we are a part. That is the culture in which we would bear witness to faith. Unless it is true that religion is really nothing more than escape from reality. It is certainly that. In a broad spectrum of the religious scene. But I appreciate Hans Küng, who acknowledges that so much of that is true, but then says, is that all religion is? Might it not also be something more? And I have no argument with about 95% of what Feuerbach says. But at this key point, I would suggest another possibility. And that is that when the human person comes to consciousness and begins to become cognizant and sensitive to the human situation, that in such a situation, we are already in a dialogue. We are already put in question. And the word, the first word, the initiatory word, has come to us from the other side or from the depths. In other words, that our religious devotion, our belief, our practice is not simply to be explained in terms of our human invention, but rather in terms of an encounter that has placed us in question, placed us before a mystery, and before a decision, the alternative, either to resign ourselves to the darkness or to stand in the conviction of faith, looking to the light. When I think about the question, I think about my hero, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. 30 years ago, I read his letters and papers from prison. And I always think of him in these terms because he was so tired of religiosity, pious cliché. He said, why is it when he was in the prison camp, the Nazi regime, he said, why is it when I talk to the unbeliever, I can talk freely about God, and when I meet the pious, I get cotton balls in my mouth? Bonhoeffer would have nothing of the kind of groveling, infantile, religious expression that was simply a barrier against an authentic engagement with life. He did not like a religion that appealed to the weakness and the vulnerability of people, but rather addressed them at their strength and at their center. Not at the boundaries of life, but what does it mean to follow Christ at the center? What does it mean to address a person in their strength, in their power, in the name of Christ? So he wrestled with that. And in the little slim volume, Letters and Papers from Prison, there are over 100 scripture references, but 5 times he refers to Jeremiah 45, and I will always thank him for that. Jeremiah 45, that small little chapter I read a moment ago, when Jeremiah has to address his secretary, Baruch, Baruch and Jeremiah have been taken off into Egypt. First of all, they said, Babylon is coming and we need to be prepared for that. And Babylon came and left them in the land. And then a group took them out of the land and brought them to Egypt. And there they are in an alien land in a hostile culture. Baruch is tired. Baruch is exhausted. Baruch is despairing. And the word of the Lord comes to Jeremiah, speak to Baruch and tell him, you are in a difficult time. This is a time when I am not building and planting. This is a time when I am tearing down, breaking down, rooting up. Tell Baruch, it's not a question in the original. It's a statement. You seek good, great things for yourself. Seek them not. And I'll give you your life as a prize. Baruch died in Egypt and Jeremiah died in Egypt, and obviously the word of the Lord was not that life would survive endlessly, but it was that if you will keep true to that vision, if you will keep faithful to my word, that in which you believe and to which you have committed yourself will live. It will survive. It will survive the darkness. It will yet see the light. Seek you great things for yourself, seek them not. It is enough to be committed to that which is true and deep and rich, to be faithful to the vision that I've given you. And of course, what are we to say of Jesus? The word came to him that he was being sought out, and it was like a trigger, a catalyst that said, the hour is now come, to use John's phrase. And he carried on that inner dialogue with himself. The image of the grain of wheat that must fall into the ground and die. And if it falls into the ground and dies, if it gives up its life, it becomes fruitful and life crops forth. But if it holds on, if it preserves, if it perpetuates, if it shields, if it guards its life, it remains sterile. And so Jesus says, now is my soul troubled. My soul literally is wrung out within me. I am wrenched. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, for this hour I came forth. Glorify your name. And that didn't mean that the darkness passed, because that one whom we follow died in the darkness. On his lips, the cry of dereliction, my God, why? So you see, religion is often an escape. And thereby we shield ourselves from an honest engagement with life that is not all sweetness and light. But it can be more. It can be response to a genuine encounter from beyond ourselves. In a statement from Bonhoeffer, which is not in your insert, I find him saying something so very powerfully. He is in prison camp. He is going to die. He said, one must abandon every attempt to make something of oneself. Whether to be a saint, a converted sinner, a churchman, the priestly type so-called, a righteous person or an unrighteous one, a sick person or a healthy one. This is what I mean by worldliness. Taking life in one's stride with all its duties and problems, its successes and failures, its experiences and helplessness. It is in such a life that we throw ourselves utterly into the arms of God and participate in God's suffering in the world and watch with Christ in Gethsemane. That is faith. That is repentance. That is what makes a person and a human being and a Christian. Refer to Jeremiah 45. How can success make us arrogant or failure lead us astray when we participate in the sufferings of God by living in this world? Living in this world, living fully in this world, honestly, with integrity. captured by a vision, faithful to the dream, unwavering, whether in the light or in the darkness, whether the promise is life or death. For it is not for us to seek great things for ourselves. It is for us to be faithful to that which has gripped us and grasped us from beyond ourselves. And then our religion will not be a groveling, sniveling, weak expression of a scared humanity, but it will be the power of a life set free, calling us, if need be, even to heroic dimensions.